Good morning, everyone. I want to start in chapter 8. The birds are in flight, the skies are blue, all is well with the world again. God has turned off the taps, and no doubt happy to be safely off the boat and back on terra firma, Noah makes an offering of thanks to God. God smells the sweet aroma and decides not to curse the ground again, not because people have stopped being evil, but because, well, despite the fact that they still are. He saw that every inclination of the human heart was only towards evil, and so he decided not to flood the earth again. Look with me at, well, if you can, in your pew Bibles, look with me at chapter 8, verse 21. Noah built an altar to the Lord, and taking some of the clean animals and clean birds, he sacrificed burnt offerings. And God said, never again will I curse the ground, even though every inclination of the human heart is evil from childhood. As long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night will never cease. So we see that God has decided to bring an end to the destruction that has come about through the flood. Not because of anything that humanity has done, but because of humanity's inclination to evil. We see that God is committed to humanity, not because of what humanity is like, but because of what he is like, because he is a faithful God. And so we see something like another creation story starting in chapter 9, where he picks up the language that we see in Genesis 1. God blessed Noah and his sons, saying to them, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth. Does that sound familiar? Chapter 1, he tells the man and woman also to be fruitful and to multiply. And we see this language again in verse 7 of this chapter. So it's like he's starting again, but not exactly, because we also see a shift in the relationship between the animal kingdom and humanity. If we didn't pick this up beforehand, it's very clear that God intends that humans are to be quite literally at the top of the food chain. In fact, humans are so significant that human behavior is the cause for the destruction of the natural world in the first place. Human actions led to the flood. Humans are so significant that what they do affects everything. Paul alludes to this in Romans 18, where he speaks of the creation waiting in eager expectation. What we do, what humans do, matters. Human morality matters. It's easy to see this in practical ways and our effects on the planet. Lots of talk about climate change and the things that we do affecting the earth. But perhaps it's not so easy to see that our morality is also intertwined with the life of this planet. God tells Noah and his sons that the fear and dread of you will fall on all the beasts of the earth and all the birds of the sky, on every creature that moves along the ground and on all fish in the sea. Everything that lives and moves about will be food for you. Just as I gave you the green plants, I now give you everything, he says in verse 3. We see the shift really clearly here, don't we? The green plants, which is a common food source for both animals and humans, is now just one of the options on the menu. I think Chris is pretty happy about that. One scholar described this as a damage limitation exercise, taking account of the increasing bloodthirstiness and aggression of humanity. But in this restoration of things, or resetting of things, there's an important distinction that will set Israel apart from other nations of the time, which is the avoidance of ingesting blood, which is where life is located. And we see this as foreshadowing the importance of blood, the blood of Jesus. Which is where we receive our life as believers. You must not eat meat that has its lifeblood in it, he says in verse 4. And for your lifeblood, I will surely demand an accounting. I will demand an accounting from every animal and from each human being. I will demand an accounting for the life of another human being. We see here the faithfulness of God to his original plan to make man and woman in his image, to set us above all the other creatures that he made. And when all is said and done, even though he brought a flood on the earth because of our behavior and our increasing wickedness, we are still intended to image and represent God on the earth. That distinctive of our nature is not blotted out by our sin. We are still unique. He made us in his image, but he is so unlike us. What parent, after punishing a child, will give them more afterwards than they had before? But this is what God does. He gives mankind more scope than before. He even sets up special protections for them from the animals and from each other. He preserves the dignity of human life and communicates how important it is. These humans, we humans, may be prone to wander, but we're still made in God's image. And so he still protects us. We see this in how he treats Noah and his sons. And he wants them and us to know his mind, to be reassured that he's not capricious. He's not going to keep wiping humanity and the created order out when it all gets too much. And so he shows that he's willing to make a promise. As always, God is always the initiator, the first mover. It's God who makes Adam and puts him in the garden, then brings Eve along as a partner. It's God who approaches Noah to make the boat to save him and his family. It will be God who approaches Abraham, and then Moses, and then Mary, and then each of us. It's always God who approaches first, invites us closer, like he did to bring you all here today. We can't get anywhere before him. He always makes the first move. We love him because he first loved us. And the rainbow is the sign of God's mercy, his promise. And it has meant this for Jewish and Christian people for thousands and thousands of years, and still is a reminder to us each time we see the rainbow in the clouds. The rainbow tells us that God has been faithful to his promise to be merciful. It reminds us of God's faithfulness. Never again will he wash away all humanity for its wickedness. That is the reminder that we see every time we see the rainbow in the clouds. Despite our sin, God will not suddenly wipe us out without warning. When he speaks of his covenant from verse 18 to 17, he repeats himself over and over again. He wants to make sure that Noah and his sons and we who come after and all who've come after know that this is God's commitment to us. If we can see that the inclination of human hearts is only towards evil, we can also see in this passage that the inclination of God is towards blessing and protection, that he is committed to us. We live in a broken world. If we believe that all existence is due to a sovereign God, we know from the course of human history, the conflict, the brutality, the cruelty, the inequality, and the injustice, that God has ample reason to just hit delete on any given day this past week. But we know that he won't, because he promises it to us here in chapter 9, in verses 9 to 17. Not only does he promise no repeat of the kind of deluge that brought such destruction, but he gives us a sign so we can be reminded and reassured. Notice it's a one-sided contract. There are no demands on us, none. It's just God making us a promise. God inclines towards blessing and protection. God inclines towards us. Because we are unique in God's creation, uniquely made in his image, we carry something of God in our humanity. And this passage shows us that he cares for us beyond our sinful inclinations. They don't stand in his way, as Kate was praying earlier. Nothing can stand in the way of God, not even our sin. We also learn from this passage that God's commitment to us is not based on our performance, but on his faithfulness. And we don't have to take that on trust. We see it in the rainbow. Every time we see the rainbow, it's a reminder of God's promised mercy to the creatures that he knows tend to rebellion. I would love to ignore the last part of this chapter because it was so tricky, but I can't. So here we come to the human response. Now, Noah had started very well with his sacrifice to God back in chapter 8. But now, having been used by the Lord to save biodiversity and told that his family will repopulate the earth, Noah goes back to the soil. And in the course of time, he plants a vineyard and gets drunk. Now, the getting drunk is not really commented on so much as what happened next in the tent, which Ham invited his brothers to witness with him. We see a son not protecting his father, and his brothers going to great lengths to do just that. In an honor and shame culture, what Ham did was unspeakable. And I won't tell you what the commentators have guessed went on in the tent, because it would make hair stand on end. The clue that something more than seeing went on is in Noah's response when he wakes up and he says, "What is this that you have done?" Clearly, he had done more than see something. The key is that Ham did not try to preserve his father's dignity. We're told back in chapter 6 of Genesis that Noah was blameless among the people of his time and walked with God. That's language that we only ever see used of Enoch, the one who didn't even die because he walked with God and was also blameless among his people. Noah was the only righteous man of his generation, the only one able to be saved, and through his righteousness, his whole family was saved. And here comes Ham, who probably takes a rare opportunity to see his father not behaving in a blameless way, and does whatever he does. Let's just skip over that. And what he does is rob his father of his honor, which was a big deal in the culture of the ancient Near East. And actually, in most non-Western cultures today, it's still a big deal. Honor and shame. Noah's curse doesn't fall on Ham, but on his son, Canaan, indicating perhaps that Canaan inherits whatever this sinful tendency is in Ham to take advantage. And the descendants of Canaan are known for a range of immoral practices. And they number the inhabitants of Sodom and Gomorrah later on in the story of God and his people. God tells Israel specifically not to copy the practices of the Canaanites in Leviticus 18:3. One scholar, Diane Bergant, explains that this episode completes what she sees as a trifecta of the breakdown of human relationship that results from the fall. She goes back to the fallout between Adam and Eve, husband and wife. The recriminations in the garden point to the conflict between husband and wife. And then she goes on to the story of Cain and Abel, where the murder of Abel demonstrates the animosity between brothers. And it's completed here with Ham. His disrespect towards his father reveals the discord between children and parents. In each case, God punishes, but in each case, he also shows mercy. So we see after the flood, God reestablishing humanity on a slightly different footing. Innocence has been lost, so the rules of engagement are different. Fear and dread, hunting and killing are now part of normal life, the life that we all know. So God puts parameters around these activities to limit their harm and preserve the dignity of human life, which is still made in his image. And then we get a little repetition of the fall, as Ham's response to his father shows that breakdown in relationships across the generations. It's depressing, isn't it? It's a really depressing picture. Like a remake of creation, which isn't quite as fun as the first one. The colors are a bit duller. The ink is smudged. The ones made in God's image are not all displaying his likeness. And yet, because God is faithful and committed and willing to make a promise to stick with his plan, it's still a hopeful picture. Because God is faithful in spite of everything. We know this is not the end. Blessing lies ahead, not just for the brothers of Canaan, but ultimately for the whole human race. And our faithful, committed God will ultimately show this when he takes on human form in Jesus to deal with our sin, finally, and to restore relationship with him. Relationship that leads to life and freedom, so that as we believe in him, we can enter into life as God intended it, with new hearts, not inclined towards sin, but inclined towards him, ready to reciprocate his love and walk with him just as Noah did, even if from time to time we may find ourselves getting drunk, even if from time to time we may fall. God longs for us to be in relationship with him, and he has made provision for us. So next time you see the rainbow, think about God's promise to his people. Amen.